This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. After more than a decade in jail, Derek Allen is a free man. Allen was convicted in the 1998 murder and sexual assault of his then-girlfriend's 2-year-old daughter. But his case has now been thrown out and all charges dismissed. The judge reviewing Allen's case had harsh words for both the prosecutors and the agents of the State Bureau of Investigation. He said their wrongdoing was willful, intentional, deceptive, fraudulent, flagrant, and egregious. Derek Allen's conviction is the latest in a string of cases involving unethical and possible illegal practices by the SBI Crime Lab. Investigative journalist at the News and Observer began looking at the SBI last year. Two of them, Mandy Locke and Joe Neff, are my guests this hour. Welcome back to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Thanks, Frank.
Joe, give us a sense of what this crime was, Derek Allen's case. Review it for us.
In 1998, police were called to an apartment off 15501 near Garrett Road. There was a 2-year-old girl, Adisha Artis, was dead. Derek Allen was, for the last half hour before he called police, the only person in the apartment with Adisha. The medical examiners found that there was that she had died probably of a shaken baby type syndrome, and that there was evidence of a sexual assault. Attention soon focused on Derek Allen. He was arrested and charged with first degree sexual assault and murder, and it was a capital crime. He was facing death row. Our colleague Andy Curlis interviewed him in the jail here in Durham within 24 hours after his arrest. He has always maintained his innocence. About a year later, he pled to first-degree murder and sexual assault. And he says to this day that he only did it under pressure, that it was either spend a long time in prison or be executed.
And this was a so-called Alford plea, meaning he didn't really plead guilty but recognized the evidence against him and said, you know, I'll go.
Correct. And since that point, he has been fighting on his own to get released. First, he got the sentence, was able on his own to get the sentence thrown out, and then a judge ordered a new trial. His latest lawyer, Lisa Williams of Durham, went to work on the case and discovered that there was a lot of evidence that was not handed over in the case. Witness statements, statements that the other woman who was at the house at the apartment that morning considered Derek Allen to be her enemy, that they had a sexual relationship in the past. This was information that Allen's lawyer should have had. But most important, when he pled guilty, the prosecutor in the case, Freda Black, told the judge at the time of the plea that the most important evidence against Derek Allen was a pair of bloody panties. Well, it turns out that the panties were twice tested, a confirmatory test for blood, and twice came back negative. This information was never shared with him until August of last year.
And Mandy, how did that come out finally?
Derek's case was one cited in an audit of about 229 cases across the state that had a very similar situation as Greg Taylor, who you've talked to and the state's heard a lot about now, the first man exonerated by the process created by the North Carolina Innocence Inquiry Commission. But what happened in this audit is they found 229 cases in which agents at the SBI had failed to disclose additional test which shed light on the blood evidence that was presented to prosecutors at the time.
So you've got this is, again, one of those 229 cases. Tell us how the News and Observer began to look into practices at the SBI, Joe.
We have been looking at issues around prosecutorial misconduct for years, and along the way we've accumulated, you know, tip files on the SBI. And then last year, Mandy, in the year before, Mandy spent a lot of time covering the case of Greg Taylor, where the SBI's misconduct and withholding of information was front and center in that case. After Taylor was exonerated, we sat down and thought, this is the time to really go deep and look at the SBI. So we did.
So we found it. Have you, and now the state legislature, in fact, is taking a look at some reforms. Mandy, tell us what's on tap in the State House.
a committee at the legislature got busy soon after our series ran in August of last year, and they started looking at how do we change the big and the little things that are affecting the SBI. They had these reform measures have passed through the House. They'll meet the Senate. All indications that they'll go into practice. They tackle all sorts of things, including demanding that analysts at the lab be certified in their specific discipline. It changes the name and the mission of the lab. Previously, as stipulated by law, the lab worked for the prosecution, for the prosecuting officers of the state, instead of for truth and fairness and for all players in the judicial system. It creates a criminal penalty for analysts, agents, and police officers who fail to disclose information to defendants in the process of a criminal trial. This is a start. Obviously, critics of the SBI would like to see a lot more, and legislators promise they'll keep at it, but this is a good start.
And Joe Neff, the fact is that in a case like this, let's just take the Allen case as one example, even if you were to appeal, if there had been testimony that the results were positive, a positive match, that would end that. You would not be able to go back over that evidence and that testimony by Freda Black, for instance, because that wouldn't be part of the appeals process. Is that right? Are you able to go back over evidence in an appeal under normal circumstances to see if there's
before
misconduct?
Before 2004, you could not. In 2004, the state passed a law, open file discovery, that makes the prosecutor has to share their entire file and the police entire file with the defendant, so it's transparent. The law was not written retroactively, so Derek Allen had no right to all of that, which sets us up in kind of a contradictory position. There are people in prison right now. If you're convicted before 2004, you don't have that. You can't go back and get all your discovery. After 2004, you have that absolute right to everything.
So all of that stuff is there. And if you take a look at the culture of the SBI and even the way the rules of the game were set up, once you made your lie in court, there's no way to go back. There's no accountability before 2004. Is there any way that you could be found out?
Well, the system was set up in a way that was difficult to go back and find these things out. And that was the important part about the creation of the North Carolina Innocence Inquiry Commission. You're right, Frank. The normal appeals process, if you're convicted in court, you appeal to the Court of Appeals, and then you have a right to appeal to the Supreme Court as well. But matters of innocence aren't dealt with there. Technical things such as a bad lawyer or information that you didn't know then, that stuff can factor in. But the fact that you're innocent and the jury got it wrong, that's not dealt with there. And Greg Taylor had to wait all those many years before he was able to get an answer to that request.
Well, talk about your investigation, because there's been some criticism of the NNO for its focus on Dwayne Deaver, the one individual who was fired for his part in all of this. What about that? The criticism that there was too much attention on one individual and not enough on the others and the system itself.
Well, I think we took a good look at the system. One of the things that we looked at very carefully were what were the policies of the SBI lab. And SBI agents and lab analysts were trained to go into court and to view this as a win-lose situation, not a quest for the truth or justice, and that to view the defendant and the defense lawyers as the enemy, basically. As far as Dwayne Deaver goes, he has appeared in a number of cases. We have Greg Taylor. There's a case of George Good in Johnston County where a federal judge ruled that Dwayne Deaver gave false and misleading testimony. He was also the head of the bloodstain pattern analysis group at the SBI for 20 years. And there's a case out of Davie County where I would recommend that all listeners go to the website and you can find the video with day two of our series that shows this experiment being done by Dwayne Deaver and a colleague to convict a man of first-degree murder. And every expert we've talked to in this field says this is nothing but junk science and an attempt to convict this man. So Dwayne Deaver has been at the center of a number of these cases, but we've written about plenty of other agents as well.
And as you say, the legislature is now looking at system-wide changes as a result of the series itself. So obviously there were elements of the system that came to people's attention. What about criminal prosecutions, though? Deaver or anyone else liable for criminal prosecution in this?
Duane Deaver is soon to be facing a judge on contempt of court charges. Now, that stems from his handling of the North Carolina Innocence Inquiry Commission process as it related to Greg Taylor. There are allegations that he had shifting testimony about the blood evidence as it related to Greg Taylor's case. And so the commission, in an unprecedented step, actually pursued criminal charges, contempt of court charges against Duane Deaver. That hearing's not been set, but it should be sometime this year. So it's possible that he could be penalized with a criminal conviction that could send him to jail or put him on some sort of probationary or some other fine or other type of punishment. Others, it remains to be seen. Other analysts have been removed from their casework in the aftermath of this, but Duane Deaver to this day remains the only person fired from the SBI as a result of his casework.
And of course, there are a lot more cases that may come to our attention out of those original 229. Joe, what's I got about 20 seconds left, but what's next?
In terms of the cases, it's a very slow process to go back and go through the files, go through all the evidence. You have to have a competent attorney to help you out. So this is something that's going to be played out for years to come.
Joe, Mandy, thank you so much for being with us. Mandy Locke, Joe Neff, staff writers for the News and Observer, which can be found online at newsandobserver.com. Coming up, March Madness. And be careful, because winning might mean losing on the roads. Talk about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us.